the company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. So one thing that I do not like is closed-mindedness. I know a lot of you are going to roll your eyes and say, ha, Jared Stillman, you've got the closest mind there is, or whatever it may be. You know, you don't have an open mind, Jared, you don't. And I'd like to think that that's not true. But sometimes, like many of you, when I truly firmly believe something, I kind of shut off the idea that the other side of it could happen, right? And so I have guaranteed that Joe Alt will not go to the Chargers with the fifth overall pick. I have guaranteed it because I look at the Chargers with Rashawn Slater, a Pro Bowl left tackle, and Trey Pipkins, a solid right tackle. You know, this ain't Nicholas Petit-Frere we're talking about, a right tackle, a.k.a.
PT.
This ain't PT we're talking about. This is a real right tackle. So they got a real left tackle and a real right tackle, and their number one receiver is Josh Palmer. In a draft where they will almost be guaranteed to be able to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. or Roma Dunze. Or Malik Nabers. So I have guaranteed that the Chargers aren't taking Joe Alt. No matter how much the Chargers Twitter account posts a video saying, you know, we're going to be offensive line centric around here. No matter how much it's, you know, Harbaugh, the way he built it at Michigan with the line. They got two tackles. They don't have a receiver. They can draft what is supposed to be an elite wide receiver prospect. And I'm supposed to believe that they're not going to do that with a franchise quarterback? So I have a hard time seeing it. But Trevor thinks they could do it. Charles Davis thinks they could do it. Mark Dominic thinks they could do it. The Pro Football Focus mock draft thinks they can do it. They have the Chargers drafting Joe Alt with the fifth overall pick. And now, an anonymous former AFC scouting director at a mock draft at ESPN.com, Matt Miller at ESPN had scouts do a mock draft. So each scout had a pick, and then the scout made the pick. Now, again, when a scout says something, it doesn't mean that this is what every scout thinks. But again, this was a former AFC scouting director who, in his mock draft, has the Chargers taking Joe Alt at 5. And so I have to admit, while I still don't think the Chargers are going to draft Alt, because I think the duck theory tells us they've got two tackles. When they traded away Keenan Allen, it's one thing to cut Mike Williams. Mike Williams was set to make $20 million, and the guy caught 19 passes last year. He's played 19 games over the last two seasons. That's a no-brainer. You cut that guy every time. But when they traded away Keenan Allen for a fourth-round pick because Keenan Allen wouldn't take a pay cut, I thought to myself, this is a team that definitely knows they're adding a receiver. Because if they weren't going to cut Keenan Allen, or they weren't going to trade Keenan Allen, like if they knew that there was a chance they weren't going to go wide receiver, they probably just would have paid full price for Keenan Allen just to make sure that they have a receiver for Justin Herbert. But I have to admit that I probably don't spend enough time on this program talking about what you do if Joe Alt is not available by the 7th pick. And then there has to be a discussion that we have ahead of time. We're going to have the discussion of if Drake May falls to the Titans at 7. We have to have the discussion of what if I'm wrong? And what if the Chargers take Joe Alt with the 7th pick? Then what do you do? Because I know that when we've talked about the Drake May stuff for Mark Dominic's Brock Bowers take on Monday, and everybody's gotten all worked up. Jared, we have to go offensive line. I ask you this question. Do you have to go offensive line so much to the point that you're going to skip out on an elite player when the elite offensive lineman's not there? Or do you say to yourself, well, there's 8 elite players in this draft, Some might say nine. You know, it depends on whether or not you put a Dunze into that group. I don't, but you could. And the Titans sucked so bad last year that you have the seventh pick, and if there are eight or nine elite players in the draft, you need one of those elite players. Again, I think the Titans, prize for being as bad as they were last year, is one of Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Brock Bowers, Joe Alt, or Dallas Turner. Eight guys that I think are elite prospects. Now, elite prospects does not mean they will be elite players. But as far as prospects on paper are concerned, they are elite. They have Pro Bowl potential. Eight of them. It's hard for me to accept the fact that with the seventh pick, you would not take one of the elite eight guys. So the first thing is, maybe I don't do a good enough job of saying, hey, you know, maybe I'm wrong. And maybe the Chargers will actually draft Joe Alt, and everybody's right about, oh, Harbaugh wants to build it, and I'm wrong. I don't think that's the case, but there then does have to be a plan behind it. As far as the former AFC scouting director, he says, quote, I think building the trenches is smarter with the talent stacks in this draft. Get a tackle now, a wide receiver in round two, and a corner in round three. That's how you win this draft, checking off premium positions of need in every round. Says we can get a starting level receiver in round two. Imagine having the first two rounds with Alt and Xavier Leggett. And so that's kind of the idea of what the Chargers could do there. But then what do the Titans do? Do you immediately? A lot of you will just say trade out. That's great, but you have to have somebody to trade out with. And whoever it is you trade out with, they have to give you something that's worth trading out. You know, again, I had in my first mock draft, I had the Titans trading out of seven because Alt goes at five in a trade with Chicago. I had the Titans trading out of seven with Minnesota, but giving up 38. So they receive 723 and 108 in exchange. And then after listening to Mark Dominic talk about how all he cares about are top 60 picks, and then doing the math on top 60 picks, it's like, nope. If I'm going to pass on one of the elite eight players in this draft, which by moving out to 11, I'm running that risk. If I'm going to do that, I need top 60 picks. I need future first and second rounders. Like, I need that if I'm going to pass on that. And so it's quite the pickle if Joe Alt's not there about what they're supposed to do. But this is the question that has to be had. So, in this case, the way I would couch the question if we were having this draft discussion is like this. Alt's gone. And one of Bowers, Turner, Adunze, Nabers, and May are available. Do you take one of those players? And we'll go through each one. Or do you trade out and hope that you can get one extra future top 30 pick? 615-737-1025. We'll do that next. Here on Stillman and Company. And we'll answer, again, we'll go phones on this again. And that's the question, you know. Okay, Alt's gone. So let's say Nabers is there. Do you take Nabers? Or do you trade back in a trade that takes you out of the elite category but nets you a first rounder in next year's draft? We'll do that next. Score big this spring with Lee Company and the National Predators in the 10K Power Play Giveaway. Enter for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 towards Lee Company Home Services. Go to LeeCompany.com/giveaway to enter. That's LeeCompany.com/giveaway. Contest entries accepted until Saturday, April 20th.
If they stayed there at five, which way do you think they would go? I've had them going wide receiver, but like I said, I can make a case for them going Joe Alt and going offensive line, this being Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, I think you can make a case for that, and I think that's very fair. I also kind of look at Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator, obviously comes over from Baltimore. You know, Eckler's not there, and they bring in Gus Edwards, who's a really good back. He's just as you very much know, he struggles to stay on the football field from a health perspective. But when he's on, he's a really good player. What do I mean by that, though? When I look at Greg Roman and being specifically in Baltimore's system, they have taken vertical press wide receivers, whether it's Rashad Bateman, so Duvernay's, you know, other guys. Obviously, Zay Flowers has been tremendous and a great player, probably the best one they picked in a while. But they continue to do that. And so what I think is, I think it's more likely to take the tight end or the offensive lineman than it is the receiver as of today, because I think that they could come back around when they're picking at 37, and I think that they could get maybe that's where Xavier Worthy goes. And so you're like, oh, now they got their vertical press guy that they wanted.
There you go. That was Mark Dominic saying he thinks it's more likely that Bowers or an offensive lineman goes to the Chargers than a wide receiver. So add him to the list of people that think that absolutely the Chargers could do this and not the Titans. And again, I just, if Joe Alt's off the board, then this makes it much harder. So here's the question I have in each case, which is, you're the Titans, and you've decided that you want Joe Alt, which most of you have already decided you want Joe Alt, and quite frankly, I kind of want Joe Alt too. So now the draft happens. Caleb Williams goes off the board, this one goes off the board, that one goes off the board, and here you are at pick number 7. Joe Alt is gone. And here you are at pick number 7, but the player whose spot Joe Alt replaces, and I think we know that the traditional mock drafts and everything else tell us that there's the three quarterbacks, Harrison, Neighbors, and in this case, it would be Alt. There's 6. So if that's the case, in this initial case, Brock Bowers is available. Dallas Turner is available. Do you take Dallas Turner or Brock Bowers at 7, an elite player with an elite pick, or do you try to trade down and get a future pick in next year's draft? And then the question has to be, okay, well, what's the future pick and everything else? And then it kind of gets complicated. But, you know, one texter says, if Alt's off the board, I would trade down with the Saints for 14 and 45. So you would trade down from 7 to 14. So now I definitely don't get Alt. I definitely don't get Turner. I definitely don't get an elite player, and I may not even get a left tackle. And I just got the 45th in pick in return. Like, that's it? I don't know if that's good enough. So in that case, okay, it's Alt or Turner that would be available. Bowers or Turner. Now let's say that Bowers is gone. Say the Giants like Bowers, and now, okay, so now it's Neighbors. Do you take Neighbors at 7? Or do you trade down? Knowing that, again, you're gonna get a pick or a future or something, but you're not gonna get like a massive freaking spanking of a haul. You're not gonna get somebody to give you a 1, a 2, and next year's 1. You're not going to get that. And you're going to end up in the range of where you're picking Delis Fuaga or J.C. Latham, not elite-ranked players, and you're passing on Malik Neighbors. What do you do there? So, Ian, I'm going to run this by you. The simple trade down, again, we're not talking about a haul here.
Mm-hmm.
A simple trade down or Malik Neighbors.
Neighbors.
A simple trade down or Brock Bowers?
Trade down.
Really?
I think so.
Bowers pretty good.
Yeah.
A simple trade down or Dallas Turner?
Trade down.
See, I think I'd take Turner. Only because, again, what would you rather have in the NFL? Would you rather have one elite player? And remember, look, the positions and the needs and everything else, they matter. Like this time of the year, we don't have a guard, we need a guard kind of thing. It matters, but 5 years from now, it won't matter. Nobody will remember what you needed at the draft. Nobody remembers what the Rams needed going into the 2014 draft. We just know that they took Aaron Donald. And so if you're moving off of an elite player, which I think Turner is, I think Bowers is, I think Neighbors is, if you're moving off the elite player in the trade down, you're getting two average play or two
really good
starting players, right? Like the way that
they need starters.
the way that Rick Spielman described Olu Fashanu. Do we have that Spielman on Fashanu cut here? This is the way that he described Olu Fashanu. And this is what I'm talking about. You're trading down for this plus another top 50 pick.
I had Fashanu down a tier because I don't think he is as complete as Joe Alt. I think the quarterbacks are more complete at their position, as we talk today, than Fashanu is. That doesn't mean Fashanu's not going to be a great player, but I just had him a tier below.
Do you think Fashanu has a chance to be special, number one, and number two? Does that determine?
I think he'll be, a day one starter. I don't think he'll be in the Pro Bowl category or top five at his position by time it's said and done. But he'll be a solid starter that you can win 17 games with.
Okay. So that's Corey Davis. Like, that's what we're talking about here. Jack Conklin. You know, again.
Conklin I can do. Davis, probably not.
Well, but again, Conklin was an all-pro.
Yeah.
So Conklin might be better than what Spielman is describing Fashanu as, which is a starter on a good team.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is you're saying no on Dallas Turner, no on Brock Bowers. Roma Dunze?
Probably not.
No on Roma Dunze in order to get two solid starters.
Two good starters, yeah.
So in this case, we're using Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis. And you're passing on Jeffrey Simmons.
Well, Jonnu was a third round pick.
Right, but I'm talking about starters that you can win games with. Like, that's what they end up becoming. Starters that you can win games with.
Got to the AFC Championship game.
You did get to the AFC Championship game. But you lost to a team that has elite players.
Quarterback.
And their entire team. Like, all they only win because of their elite players. They win because of the 3 to 4 elite players they have every year. The quarterback, the DT, the tight end, and Hill, Snead, those characters. Like, that's, I think I want an elite player. I think I want the elite player. I think I want an elite player over what Spielman just described Fashanu as. Scott is up next here on our program. Thank you for calling and thank you for waiting. Go ahead, Scott.
Jared, I tend to agree with you, except how would you feel in this instance if you trade down and let's say you get 14, 45, whatever, and you've still got 33, but you wind up with two starting tackles, maybe Latham and Fuaga, or maybe Fashanu and Mims, and another top 50 pick. How do you feel then about missing out on one of your top eight?
So now you're talking about I'm getting three top 50 picks out of this as opposed to two top 50 picks.
No, you've already got two. You've already got two. You're going to trade down. Let's say you get 14 and 45, and you're adding that to 33. So with that, you wind up with two starting tackles and a, who knows, starting middle linebacker or safety or interior.
I think I'd rather take the elite player. Scott, thank you for your call. I think I'd rather take the elite player. And the example I use is, I'm using Dallas Turner as the example here, right? So I think Dallas Turner is elite. Dallas Turner at 18 years old was going up against grown men in the Southeastern Conference.
If you like, think,
to me,
yeah, if you
that's
think
elite.
Turner is legit, the next Javon Kearse kind of, you know, shift, it might be worth it.
You have to take that, right? Like,
yeah.
that pass rusher? So, like, that, I'm taking that before taking, you know, well, Fashanu can come in here and he'll play left tackle and he can be okay at it. Like, okay, but, like, I stunk. And when I stunk, I want good players. Like, I want elite out of that. I don't want, you know, Skoronski.
Just, you know, does it matter where they're at in roster construction and where your team is?
It doesn't matter to me. It only matters to
like,
me.
Like, would it matter if you had Levis in a year or two and he's more developed and you know? Or, and you try and build, or you just go for the best players and hope for the best?
It matters to me when I don't have the seventh pick. When I am picking at 28 and we're completely out of the elite category, then it matters more to me. But there's a reason why you're picking seventh. And you're picking seventh because you suck. And so that's again, what was it Polian said? You know, hey, this is how you draft in the top 10. And you don't draft the same way outside of the top 10 that you do in the top 10. Fitz will join us next on the program. We'll get his thoughts on the draft, the Titans, and all of this stuff. And we'll do that coming up next. Twice Daily, that's my go-to. It should be your go-to as well. Twice Daily has your cravings, and you can save on every visit. So stop in and get rewarded. And all you need to do is join the Twice Daily Rewards program to unlock special discount savings, and you can enter their sweepstakes and so much more. Try the new wraps, Italian, ham and cheddar, turkey and Swiss, Nashville hot chicken. They're made to order with your favorite toppings, and when you download that Twice Daily app, you can order ahead. You can also go to Twice Daily where it's snack time all the time. And they've got your favorites like chicken fingers, tater rounds, pretzels, and I love the boneless wings they have at Twice Daily. I really do. Twice Daily. What are you craving? Stillman and Company. So everybody's all mad, you know, about all these takes we've had this week, whether it was discussing Mark Dominic saying that the Titans should take Brock Bowers at 7, even if Joe Alt's there. People got mad about that. Me talking about, by the way, Tim Hasselbeck thinks the same thing, and the idea of, hey, if Drake May actually falls in this draft, the way that some people are starting to say, maybe you take him and move on from Levis. And I think now where people are getting mad about the idea of taking Dallas Turner if Alt's off the board. And so all I've just realized is a lot of people just keep getting mad and mad and mad. And now people are just saying crazy things into the text line. Somebody said, Skoronski made the all-rookie team. Actually, he did not. Steve Avila and Osiris Torrance of the Bills did. But with that, Jason Fitz joins us now on the program. Fitz, let's start on Joe Alt. How likely is it, in your opinion, that Joe Alt is available with the 7th pick? And then how likely is it that if he is available, the Titans are taking him?
Yeah, I said yesterday on one of my Yahoo Sports shows, and I said over the weekend on Fox Sports Radio, if he's available at 7 and Rand Carthon doesn't just sprint up there and take him, I would be shocked. So if he's available at 7, I would just be stunned if it goes any other direction. I do not care about any. Like, there are not 32 starting caliber left and right tackles in the NFL. He is, you talk to any guy that played offensive line at the highest possible level, they'll talk about him in ways that you rarely hear people talk about. He's plug and play. It's 100%. If he was there at 7, I wouldn't blink an eye. I don't care who else is. I don't care if Marvin Harrison Jr. was there at 7. I would still take Joe Alt if I'm the Titans. So that's how much I like Joe Alt. That being said, I think he goes 5 to the Chargers. I don't think the Chargers are lying to people. I think they are going to go with the best offensive lineman on the board, even though they don't have any wide receivers, but they're going to figure that out. Wins above replacement, you can get a wide receiver in the second round where the Chargers are picking. So I think Alt goes off the board at 5, but if he's there at 7, the Titans should absolutely take him.
Add Fitz to the list of people that think Alt's off the board. So with that, if that's the case, and you're the Titans, I believe, and this is just my opinion here, I believe there are 8 elite players in this draft. The 3 quarterbacks, and I'm not counting JJ, the 3 quarterbacks, Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Joe Alt, Brock Bowers, and Dallas Turner. If you're the Titans, do you take one of the elite players, or do you take an offensive lineman who's not elite because you need an offensive lineman?
No, you never draft for need that high. Like, I genuinely don't believe that. Like, in general, if you're picking in the top 10, it doesn't matter that you have a need. If the guy's, like, drastically, if you're getting the 3rd best wide receiver or the 2nd best wide receiver, but they're drastically down on your board, then that's one thing, you know. But I think you have to look at this offensive line situation and say, hey, I think the over-under right now on Vegas is at 10.5 offensive linemen to go in the first round, some dumb number like that. There's a ton of linemen that are going to go. I understand that. Just because you need one doesn't mean you take one. If you think Brock Bowers is an all-pro, then you take him at 7. Like, if over just, I need a offensive lineman, I need a warm body to put in there. You can address warm bodies a lot of ways. I think we have to look at some of this, like, it's almost like house shopping. Like, just because you have a need doesn't mean that that need fits the right budget for where you are. And your good GMs across the league will understand their draft board enough to say, hey, we need great players, so we're going to stay here or we're going to trade down. Like, if you're just going to take an offensive lineman, maybe a trade down. But, yeah, if they're in a situation where they believe that Brock Bowers is, you know, one of those 10 players in the league that can help you win a Super Bowl, then why wouldn't you? And I would remind everybody to look at last year's final 4 teams. All 4 teams that were left had a difference-making, oh, my God, epic tight end. Like, that's not accidental. So having that sort of guy in the right offense can be very, very, very beneficial to a team. Having a great tight end means something. So if you got Brock Bowers there, and you've got him listed as a, yes, we think he's a game changer. You take a game changer. You don't take an offensive lineman just because you need one unless you believe that he's an everyday 10-year starter.
Jason Fitz is with us, Yahoo Sports, Fox Sports Radio. So yesterday I pissed a lot of people off, Fitz, because I said that if Drake May falls to seven, which I don't think Drake May is going to fall to seven, but again, this is the kind of discussions you have ahead of the draft so that when it comes up on draft night, you've already made your decision. If Drake May falls to seven, I take him and trade Levis. And I understand that Levis is not going to have a humongous, you know, I think you can probably get a next year second out of a team like Denver that won't have a quarterback choice. But even if I can't, I'll worry about that later because May is an elite quarterback prospect. Tim Hasselbeck says you take May and you trade Levis. And yet people are furious because A, they think Levis has already proven he's a franchise quarterback. And B, I guess they just don't think the Titans should be in a position to draft a quarterback. What do you think of this specific situation?
If Drake May's on the board and I ran the Titans, I would take Drake May in a heartbeat. And that's nothing against Will Levis. If you looked at Will Levis in this year's draft class, if last year's version of Will Levis was in this year's draft class, he would not be rated above Drake May. Will hasn't shown anything that makes everybody say, oh, yeah, stop the presses. We got our C.J. Stroud. Like, let's not get it twisted. He did some nice things. Like, he might turn out to be really good, but are we really willing to bet that? And do you think that Drake May, and I do, by the way, think Drake May's a franchise quarterback. If the Titans are sitting there at seven and Drake May's on the board, the more interesting thing to me is, like, who's going to offer them 3 years of first-round picks? Like, I keep hearing this among smart people. The Vikings, in order to move up to four or five, are going to have to give up not just this year's two first-rounders, but an additional first-rounder. That's the going cost because of quarterbacks. So the presumption along most league circles is it's going to take three first-rounders to move up. So I guess the question, if I'm the Titans, is do I believe Drake May is better than a couple of first-rounders in a second? Because you might be able to get that from the Raiders, from the Vikings, from the Broncos to move up if Drake May is falling and they haven't been able to move into that situation. So I think that gets intriguing. But like I get being a fan of Will Levis. That's cool if you're a fan of Will Levis. But let's not get it twisted. Like, Will didn't turn around and do something so historic that you can say for certain right now, organizationally, you have your quarterback. I think they have a responsibility to be drafted or to be scouting this year's quarterback class and making sure that they're content with who they have above those guys.
See, and to that point, too, when you brought up, you know, the idea about Drake May and about, well, you know, teams think it's going to cost that much to get up there. I don't think Arizona and the Chargers are moving out. Like, as much as it's, oh, you know, Arizona would love, you know, who's playing wide receiver for Arizona right now? Nobody. And the Chargers, again, I go back with, if these teams move out, they're missing on elite players. And Monty Austin-Fort's already got a lot of picks. So it's like, at some point, you need elite players over just, you know, having a bunch of picks. The thing I don't understand is J.J. McCarthy. Because I do not believe that Minnesota is geared up to go all in for J.J. McCarthy. I do think Minnesota might be geared up to go all in on Drake May. And so I could see a scenario, Fitz, where the first pick goes off the board and it's Caleb Williams. The second pick goes off the board and it's Jaden Daniels. And then New England flops with Minnesota and goes all the way back to 11 for J.J. McCarthy. And that's where your three first-round picks come into play. But I don't think Denver, I don't think it has the stomach to trade all those picks. And I don't know if the Raiders would have the stomachs to trade all those picks for the third or fourth best quarterback. But I think that the three first rounders, I think that's only for Drake May at three. And that's only if New England doesn't like Drake May.
So if the Super Bowl had somebody fairly plugged in with the Raiders, tell me that the Raiders were prepared to offer three firsts and more to move up if Jaden Daniels was available. That's the guy that they covet. I just don't think Jaden's going to be available. The hard part about all of this is that a couple of guys that are very, very, like, smart, intelligent people that are not your usual BS people when it comes to all the draft stuff that are plugged in Washington have made it clear to me that J.J. McCarthy really is the number one or two quarterback on their draft board. Like, they love J.J. So I don't know. I don't get it with J.J. I would never – like, I'm not sitting here giving you my opinion on J.J. because sure. My opinion on J.J. is, like, he's the ultimate roll of the dice. Who the hell knows at this point? Like, I just think he's the riskiest quarterback this year because you have so little proof of concept on what you'd be asking him to do. So I think for me, that's a big issue. But for teams, Washington loves him. And that's like, you know, we all know this. Like, you talk to some people and you're like, yeah, you're full of it. No, Like, those are very real. You know, as I prep for Yahoo's draft shows that we're going to be doing, I have talked to a bunch of people, and Washington loves JJ. Minnesota does like JJ. And, you know, I don't know why these teams love him, but I think if you've got a smart quarterback, and JJ is that, he's the only quarterback that was being asked to run the offense in its entirety without the same level of handholding from the sidelines, which I know the Vikings like. If you're a smart offense, there's a lot to like about JJ. And I'm telling you, like, he does well in the interviews. Like, I spent time with him at the Natty. I can see why teams fall in love with him in the interview. I wouldn't do it. I'd be pretty stunned. I still think quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, 4. I think the Giants are going to move up to 4. And then in that situation, Arizona moves down to 6, knowing that they're either going to get Marvin or they're going to get Malik. So they can still answer the situation they need, and they can pick up an additional first rounder to do it. So, like, that's how I think the top four go.
So if that's the case, you think the Chargers are going to pass on Marvin Harrison Jr. and draft Joe Alt?
Yes.
Okay, then if that's the case, should the Titans take Malik Nabers at 7?
Yes. They should take Malik Nabers over whichever. I mean, if you love Fuaga, if you love Olu, if you love one of those, like, I think, yeah, that the Malik Nabers is better than any of the offensive line prospects they would have available to them right then. I think that, but the only thing is, man, as I say that out loud, I mean, because Malik, I think, is spectacular. But as I say that out loud, the only fear I have is, like, the drop-off in the second round is going to be real on the offensive line. It ain't going to be on the wide receivers. Like, there are going to be wide receivers to be had at the top of the second round that can still be a big benefit. So I guess it just depends on what sense they have or what they have in the room. I think personally, when I look at the Titans, that their offensive line is a detriment for a team that otherwise has enough talent, I think, to win some games this year.
Okay, I have a hot take question for you that I want your opinion on. So you are an executive at NBC, CBS, Fox, whomever, and you've got the choice to bid on, and you've got a X amount of dollars, and you've got a choice to bid on for the future, the NCAA Women's Tournament or the Masters. Which property would you rather own on television over the next 10 years?
The NCAA Women's Tournament, for sure.
Wow! That's incredible!
I mean, there's a couple of things that go into it. Like, where I last weekend said I think the Masters has become the most overrated event in the sports calendar at this point. If you just pull up the current listing of the PGA golfers, good luck. Like, it's like when bro country ruled country music and every artist looked and sounded the same. Like, 90% of these guys, like, good luck trying to figure out in a store which one's which. Because women's college basketball allows players, or really, frankly, forces players to stay for several years, you get the better chance at personalities, you get the better chance at rivalries, you get the better chance of, you know, sort of building something over time that people invest in. I think there's going to be a drop-off next year. I'm not the total idiot, sure, despite contrary, you know, but I think that the drop-off is going to be far more minimal than some people think. I genuinely believe we're about to have an era of women's college basketball where they continue to embrace their personalities, they continue to embrace the rivalries that they have, the trash talking, all of these things that you fall into. Like, I covered the Final Four for the first time in my life in Phoenix, and it was amazing. One thing that Danny Green and I did walking around was we asked people that were there if they could name 4 players from the men's tournament or if they could name 4 players from the women's tournament. 90% could name the 4 players from the women's tournament. That's just, that's not going to stop. Like, the men's is a one-and-done world that people forget about. The Masters are a bunch of forgettable golfers, and there's not going to be a replacement to Tiger, because guess what? There's not going to be a first person that looks like him doing it that changes the way an entire race feels about golf while also being excellent for a 15-year span that nobody can even wrap their mind around. Like, that's not going to happen. So golf is just going to be golf. And, like, if you're super into it, you'll love it and you'll think I'm an idiot. But your common people just sitting around in Kansas, they ain't worried about the Masters, but they'll watch women's college basketball. There's proof concept on that.
Jason Fitz, as always, great stuff, Fitz.
Appreciate you, brother. Have a great week.
Yep, Jason Fitz on the program. I mean, I'm on Fitz's side on this, but, I mean, he was just, like, not even close, women's tournament. Okay, so we had some revisionist history on Robbie and Rex Road this morning I want to get to that we'll do coming up next here on the program. FanDuel Sportsbook's My Official Sportsbook app, the NBA play-in tournament, gives teams the chance to play their way into the postseason. That's right. So it only seems right that new customers on FanDuel can play their way into $150. Just place any $5 bet and you'll get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose, to use during the NBA playoffs. Three-pointers made in a game, over, under point total, first basket score, and more. Just make sure that you're not playing in the game if you're going to be doing this like that moron in Toronto. Just go to FanDuel.com/JGM to get started. That's FanDuel.com/JGM. FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. 21 and over in present Tennessee. First online real money wager. Only $10 first deposit required. Bonus issues, non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789.
The conversations have gotten very serious for the Tennessee Titans to move out of 11 to go up to 3. So what are they moving up for? I was told the approach here had nothing to do with specific position. This was about an individual player that the head coach and GM both agreed is the right choice and who they believe is the best player on the board for this team.
The Houston Texans select C.J. Stroud, quarterback, Ohio State.
Okay, so that was last year. We all remember Diana Gate. Where Diana Russini showed up telling everybody the Titans were trading up to 3 for C.J. Stroud, and then an hour before the draft, the betting market said Stroud's going number 2. So this morning, I was listening to Robbie and Rex Road, Paul Kaharski was in studio, and PK, in my opinion, went full-on revisionist history about what happened. And the sad part about this is that some of you guys believe this, because to me, there is no question that the Houston Texans changed their draft plans based upon you telling everybody what you were going to do. But PK says that's not true. Here's what he said this morning.
I have a hard time believing that somebody in the building told Diana Russini that they wanted to go up and get C.J. Stroud. Like, what? How would that help them, and why would they do that? A team that never says anything about anything, really. What's the purpose?
Good question.
But the idea that that alone somehow let the Texans dupe them. I mean, the Texans had a pretty good plan there to do what they did. We think that came together in a minute after they heard a report that the Titans were interested in Stroud. I don't. I think it's more complex than that. I think it's pretty obvious that I think a lot of us said, well, if the Titans could have a quarterback in this draft, it'd be C.J. Stroud. And where would they have to go to get C.J. Stroud? Well, safely, you'd have to go to Arizona. Well, who has more capital to deal with Arizona than the Titans do? Well, their division rival Houston does. You know, and I talked to somebody in the building afterwards, and they said, it's pretty hard to say you got outplayed by a team that's 7 picks
ahead.
Had the edge
on you from the start.
Okay, I love that part at the end, right? Somebody in the building told me there was no way we could have screwed that up. Uh-huh, of course. Now, the first thing he asks is the most important part, which is, what benefit would it be for the Titans to tell Diana Russini that they're going to draft Stroud? Agreed. There is no benefit strategically. Maybe there is socially or personally, as far as sourcing and everything else is concerned. And I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but since January 17th or whatever the date was, Diana has not had a lot of info on the Titans, in case you guys have not noticed that or whatever. But see, that's the easy way out, is to say, well, they had the second pick. They were going to take Stroud the whole time. Except that's not true. Unless you believe all the sourced information, Indianapolis knowing Tennessee didn't want Anthony Richardson, but that they wanted C.J. Stroud, that was written in an ESPN.com article, or whether or not it was Charles Robinson on Robbie and Rex Road right after the draft, and Charles Robinson lives in Houston, and he told you that the Texans changed their plans based off what the Titans said.
The ideology between what player you selected first was based on who Arizona wanted. They knew Arizona had a super high grade on Will Anderson, so if they passed Will Anderson at 2 and Arizona decides, we don't like either offer, now we're taking your guy. They figured that's less likely to happen if we just take Stroud off the board at 2, and now Tennessee goes, well, that's our guy. We're not staying in this now. When they kind of went on the clock, they're like, we got to pick the quarterback at 2 because we have no clue what ultimately Tennessee offered. We have to just take Tennessee out of the running. So we just take the quarterback at two. If Arizona says, screw it, we're not taking your offer, then we're going to lose Will Anderson, and that stinks. But we're definitely not getting sniped on the quarterback by getting cute and trying to take the defensive player first.
They had a higher grade on Will Anderson. And so what they were going to do is they knew Arizona wanted Will Anderson. They were going to take Will Anderson, and they were going to trade back with Seattle at five, and they were going to take Stroud. And then they found out that the Titans were going to move up to three. And so when they heard that, they decided, okay, like, the Titans are going to take Stroud if we do that. So we're going to lose one of these players probably. And what happened was the owner said, and this is well documented, the owner said, take the quarterback. And if we lose the pass rusher, we lose the pass rusher. And D'Amico Ryans didn't like that because D'Amico Ryans wanted the pass rusher. So the compromise was, okay, call Arizona, ask them what it'll take in order to get three. And then they gave up the world. But they would have taken Anderson if you hadn't spilt the beans. Now, you may not have spilt the beans. It may have been Arizona who spilt the beans. That's possible. But, I mean, the beans had to get spilled somehow. Why else was Diana Russini in town? Why was Diana Russini, who was supposed to be in Indianapolis where they were drafting a quarterback for sure, why was she sent to Nashville where they took a guard with the 11th pick? And, again, I'm not, again, I don't know for a fact whether it was Arizona or whether it was you or whether it was whatever. I mean, I just, you know, I just think at the end of the day, when it all comes down to Diana Russini's reporting, she has not been reporting a lot on the Titans since Mike Vrabel hadn't been a coach. But the idea that that didn't happen because they were always going to take Stroud, this is not true. And it's well documented. Speaking of Joe, it's time to argue Jared versus Joe. And we will do that next. I'm going to company 102.5, 106 for the game.